No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. This is show number 167. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today Sports Media Group NFL Wire site. My co-host, Seth Cox, is from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything?
Good, Jess. A lot better than it would have been, you know, if the game would have not ended on that second Phil Dawson field goal attempt.
Absolutely. This week, well, and Seth warned us that we were going to basically give our eulogy this week. It almost came to that, but the Cardinals came away with a 16-13 overtime comeback victory in week two to even their record to 1-1. And that's what we're here to talk about in this, the 167th episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. If you haven't yet, of course, make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes or any of the other fine podcast sites where you can find our show. And we definitely wouldn't complain for, we would definitely would not hate you at all for a 5-star rating. So go ahead and make sure that you get on iTunes and you subscribe to the show. You can find it a number of other ways, but that might be the easiest way to do it. Subscribe to it and get every episode sent right to you when you want it. So the Cardinals win 16-13. What we're going to talk about, if we think the Cardinals have changed. Has anything changed for the Cardinals and our perspectives for the rest of the season? We're going to talk about what stood out, good and bad, and we're going to talk about, you know, things like Carson Palmer and his play, some of the individuals, and then we're going to look ahead to the Dallas Cowboys. The Cardinals come home finally. They will take on the Dallas Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott and Dez Bryant and Dak Prescott and Jason Witten and all that goodness that comes with the Cowboys on Monday Night Football next week for the Cardinals home opener. It's been a month since they were at University of Phoenix Stadium to play some football. And so we finally get back, and ultimately they finish 1-1. That's what I thought that we were going to be months ago. I wanted them to be 2-0, but you know, that's kind of what I expected at the beginning of the year. But let's go ahead and get started. We're going to talk about the Cardinals win. So ultimately, 16-13, did anything change for you as to how you see the Cardinals right now as to their outlook for the rest of the season?
I thought that we saw a potentially dominant defense. One of the things that happens a lot in the NFL, except for the Cardinals for some reason, is teams go in and run their script, which is usually, you know, 10 to 15 plays that they've worked on in practice to kind of get into a flow of how to run things. And especially with the new quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, it was kind of expected that the Colts would come out and look okay for a drive or two. There was the, I'll call it boneheaded, but odd penalty on Rodney Gunter for the new leverage rule where he put his hands on the back of the center, or the long snapper, excuse me, which is now a very important rule that they're enforcing. It was enforced later on the Cowboys against the Broncos, so it's not just the Cardinals. The NFL's not out to get the Cardinals. And that extended the drive, and then they scored a touchdown. Then, you know, it was basically close to dominant. You saw flashes of dominance. And then you saw some bend but don't break. It reminded me a little bit of 2014 with like Drew Stanton at the helm. Like, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be pretty. But you know what? Maybe this team can win some games that way while the offense tries to figure out whatever the heck's going on with it. And that's kind of what I took from this game. Like, they're not a dynamic offense. I mean, I don't know if anybody that's going to say different. They're just not right now. But they can be effective enough. They can sustain drives long enough. And they can flip field position good enough. And now they have a punter who's doing a really nice job. And all of a sudden, they can lean on that defense just a little bit like they did in 14. And again, hopefully, you know, I'm not saying that it'll never happen, but hopefully we will see the offense find its way. It's never going to be 2015 again. It's just, it's not going to happen. We can give up those dreams and wishes and whatever, but it can still be a highly productive and, more important, efficient offense. It doesn't have to be the, you know, nearly 500 yards of offense a game, but it needs to control the ball, and touchdowns are the key. You don't have to score 30 points a game, but if you're scoring, you know, 21, that puts you in a good spot where you only giving up, you know, 14 or 17 points a game. And I think this defense is capable of that, especially early in the season while the offense is trying to find its way.
And for me, I look at this game and I'll be on it. I said it on a radio spot that I had last week. I think I talked about it on the show as well. My biggest fear, or what I expected out of the Cardinals this last week, despite the loss in week one, was I expected a dogfight for going into the second half. It didn't. I expected the Cardinals and the Colts to play very tightly for half quarters to three quarters, and then have the Cardinals pull away in the fourth quarter, knowing that, well, I believe your team. Something I believe, especially early in the season, home openers are something special for teams. And so it's, you always have to give a special look at home teams in their first game of the season at home, because they're fired up first time they're in front of their crowd. The crowd's fired up. And I'm going to add on top of that with the Colts. They had just come off a very embarrassing loss. Not just your run-of-the-mill loss, but they looked like the worst football team in the entire league, and losing the way they did to the Los Angeles Rams in week one. And especially getting killed through the air by Jared Goff. I knew going into this week, they were going to put up a fight. They were going to be much better and much more physical than they were against the Rams. It just, for me, I was disappointed, and it was because of some stupid things early in the game, or even the first half, that told me it's going to be harder. So it's just a harder game to win. But eventually the Cardinals came around. Now, did this change anything about the Cardinals for me? I mean, I was worried after week one, but it was just ultimately an East Coast road loss. And we know the stat about the 0-2 starts. They didn't finish 0-2. But when you go back to when I looked at the schedule and made my predictions for this upcoming season, I saw 4 months that these first 2 weeks of the season would be a split. Now, it wasn't what I expected, because obviously I was expecting Andrew Luck to play. And ideally, the split would have gone differently, where they win in Detroit, and if they had to lose one of the two games, they lose in Indianapolis, because that's an AFC game, and it doesn't figure to any, other than the record itself, it doesn't figure into anything for the playoffs, for playoff seeding, while the NFC won a game against the Lions, it does. But what do I think in the Cardinals? Especially with the NFC West the way it is, everyone's 1-1 except for the 49ers, which means, you know, Cardinals look flawed right now, but they're definitely not out of it. And after seeing what the Lions did to the Giants, who were supposed to be also a contending-ish type team, you wonder if that Lions loss isn't as bad as it's, and other than the fact that they could have won it, you don't feel so bad for losing to a tough team on the road. I saw, when David Johnson went down, we talked about this. I saw perhaps, you know, let's look at 2014. But the issue is, as we'll talk about with Palmer, he can't make the mistakes that he was making. So let's talk about what stood out, both good and bad. Let's talk about the good first. It's always nice. Oh, let's not be doom and gloom, but what were the good things that stood out to you?
I think the first thing that comes to mind right away is that you're happy with Chandler Jones. Week one, he had a sack, but it was kind of that, okay, here's his obligatory sack in the game, and then, you know, he's kind of quiet the rest of the time. But this week, he was impactful. And sacks matter, and you're never going to, you know, get upset when a guy sacks a guy in the first quarter. But the sacks he had in this game in the fourth quarter, causing the fumble that, you know, should have ended the game right there, but none of his teammates were aware enough to the ball rolling around. You know, it just showed that he is and he can be one of the most dominant edge rushers in the NFL. And so I thought that was important to see from him. I thought you have to love what you've seen out of Josh Bynes. Maybe it's bad. And bad's probably not the right word, but maybe it's bad that he's looked like the most consistent linebacker that you have when, you know, you're talking about Carlos Dansby and Hassan Reddick. But Reddick's a rookie. You expect kind of highs and lows, ups and downs. Dansby's 35. Let's be honest. Being a 35-year-old inside linebacker is probably pretty close to being a 38-year-old quarterback. Like, the wall comes fast and hard. And so, you know, so Bynes' performance in lieu of, you know, Deion Buchanan still being out, I think has been, you know, kind of not just important, but it's been refreshing to see the consistent performance from Bynes. And then, again, I thought the secondary was just really good. You know, we talked about Bethel quite a bit last week and that he had one kind of bad, you know, catch he gave up when he gave up the touchdown to Kenny Golladay, the first one where he just didn't get his darn head around again. But this week, it seemed like everybody was really locked in. And I, again, maybe that's Jacoby Brissett and bad Colts offense not having practiced but three times or six times, whatever it was. But I think you are happy to see them put up a dominant performance. And then, you know, of course, to punctuate that with Tyrann Mathieu and his interception, I just think, you know, the defense as a whole was a bright spot. Offensively, I think there was a couple players, but I'll let you carry those.
Well, on offense, what was good to see? Well, one, I think the first person you have to talk about is J.J. Nelson. J.J. Nelson's play was absolutely, utterly required. Larry Fitzgerald was quiet, only, you know, three catches for 21 yards. The running game was blasé, as we expected. And, you know, the receiver play, they need someone to step up and be that guy. And we've seen J.J. Nelson, you know, over the last half of last season became a scoring threat. And, you know, the stats out there, since the midseason last year, only one player in the NFL has more receiving touchdowns. That's Jordy Nelson with, you know, Aaron Rodgers, everyone's favorite quarterback. But J.J. Nelson right there with eight touchdown catches since midseason of last year. And, you know, he made big plays. He made big plays down the field. He caught a couple of very tough balls to catch. And it was a breakthrough thing that they needed. Likewise, I talk about things that stood out on the good was not how Carson Palmer played early on, but it is how he turned it around late in the game. And making those big plays defensively. I look at, and I wanted to point out a couple things on Chandler Jones. Chandler Jones has been, you know, last year he got his sack a game and was kind of quiet after that. But let's look at the stats. Through two games, he's got three sacks, five quarterback hits, two pressures, and a forced fumble. So he's averaging 5 pressures a game if we're looking at those analytic numbers. So he's causing disruptions on 10 plays as a pass rusher in 2 games, which is really excellent. I mean, if we're going to go by what we're seeing, he's on pace for 24 sacks and a gazillion hits. But it's really good to see that, as opposed to Marcus Golden. That's another guy who stood out this week. He didn't finish again, so he's still sackless. But week one, he was real quiet. He wasn't really anywhere. He had the one pressure, but he was productive in week two. He comes across with the Cardinal stats. So he had, I believe they had one credit him for one pressure a week ago. He has now 6 disruptions. So he had 5 against Brissett, 4 pressures, a couple of hits. And so, you know, those were things that stood out in terms of the good. Now, the not so good. Was there anything else on the good side that you wanted to talk about in terms of standing out to you?
Did you hit on Andy Lee? I thought Andy Lee has done a really nice job thus far. He's gotten too much work, but not of his own volition. Nothing he can do about that. But he's, you know, just over 46.5 yards per punt average, and I think only 9 yards per return. Maybe it's a little less than that even. I think his, you know what, it's 6 yards per return. So his, you know, net average is still over 40 yards per punt, which nice is to see.
Markedly better over the last couple of seasons, where the net was what, in the low, in the mid 30s.
Yeah,
it was like 34, 35, is something ridiculously bad. And that's a credit to the Cardinals going out and getting Lee a quality punter. Well, you have to hope that it lasts at his age. We saw Dave Zastil sort of fell off the table with his after coming off that groin injury. But it also, you look at the special teams coverage play, they're getting really, really quality work from guys like Brandon Williams and Buda Baker on special teams. And, you know, Justin Bethel, who has been that gunner guy on punts, he's not that anymore. He's not really playing on special teams. And so they're turning that over to guys, to the younger guys like Elijah Penny and Buda Baker and Brandon Williams, and they are doing a good job, which is good to see considering the dumpster fire the special teams were a year ago.
Exactly. And the other one was, and I know that this, you know, and I wrote about this in my winners and losers piece on Sunday night, but I was happy with the way Phil Dawson responded. I know that he missed a 42-yard field goal, and that's frustrating, especially for fans after they, you know, dealt with the Catanzaro issue all of last year. But he got a chance, and, I mean, it was true, and it was right down the middle. I mean, there was no question when he kicked that, it was good. And so the response was what you want to see, much like you discussed with Palmer. Like, it wasn't the start you wanted with Dawson. It wasn't exactly, you know, the end you were hoping for until you got to the very end, and he really did respond. So, you know, I thought it was important to see Dawson come out and respond.
And that's incredibly important, though. You know, in terms of the things that are bad so far, if you want to look through 2 weeks, Dawson's missed a kick each of the first 2 weeks. And on a side note, Madden 18 is not a fan of Phil Dawson. I sim the games every week as just something fun to do to see how things do. I take out all the injured players and see how the artificial intelligence makes things work. Dawson has missed an extra point each of the first 2 games that I've simmed. Like their first touchdown, he always misses the extra point. I don't know why. They don't have the same trust in Dawson and here's the thing with Dawson. No, I mean, obviously he was going to miss kicks this year. It's just, especially the one on Sunday was disappointing because, you know, he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And he's supposedly, you know, he's one of the most clutch kickers in NFL history. Now, I do think the whole icing the kicker thing is stupid, but it worked that time. And in this case, that shouldn't matter for Dawson because he does the same thing over and over again. But he just pushed it. I don't know why he didn't do the exact same thing. Granted, I don't know how to kick a football, so I don't know how easy or difficult it is to to repeat those mechanics time after time after time. But we can't continue without the, because, you know, it's really been happening on social media, both on Facebook and on Twitter, and even comments on our site's pages. People are already ready to, you know, to declare the death of Carson Palmer, bury him in the ground, and to move on to Blaine Gabbert. Carson Palmer had some issues yesterday, and I think it was mostly fair of Bruce Arians when he said at the end of the first half. Now, granted, you have to understand the context. At halftime, right around halftime, sideline reporter for the Cardinals, Paul Calvisi, talked to Arians and asked him what, you know, what the struggles have been for the first half, and Arians was very clear. Quarterback play. He mentioned the quarterback play a week ago. He mentioned the quarterback play against the Colts, which, guess what? As you'll know, you can test to this. Bruce Arians, it appears, has handled Carson Palmer for 4 years with kid gloves. He's always been very careful to toss Blaine everywhere else. That first year, 2013, all those interceptions that he had, he's like, it seemed almost comical the way he explained away different things. But he has been very seemingly impatient for him. But the context is, in this case, it was right at the end of the half. Carson had just moments before had made a boneheaded throw. And it's a throw towards the end zone that we've seen Carson Palmer make that same mistake on time and time and time again, season after season after season. He sees an opening with a receiver down the field, and he ignores the safety. It happened a couple years against Pittsburgh. It's happened a couple other times against other teams. But he gets wide-eyed, and he sees an opening down the field and forgets to account for the safety over the top who can come out of nowhere and make that pick. But he just threw an interception. Carson Palmer, in my opinion, even in the first half, looked much better in terms of quarterbacking. His throws weren't as erratic. But there's still, it wasn't good in that first half.
And an interesting statistic on Palmer, and you know, the biggest, you know, complaint, or I guess would be excuse, or whatever you want to call it, for him, for especially this season, has been, well, he's lacking protection. And so, you know, they have all these measurements and stats, and, you know, whatever you want to call them, and You look at Carson Palmer, and every year since 14, you know, he's really been, I shouldn't even say since 14, sorry, since 13, he's been basically the same guy. When he's not pressured, his passer rating in 13 was 108. In 14, obviously, very small sample size, but was 113. In 15, it was 107, and then last year it was just over 100 at 100.1. When he was pressured, that's when the problems arise. And in his best years, you know, you saw numbers in the low 60s, but then in 15, again, his best year, he was at 88.2. This year, this is two games, so the sample size is really bad. But this year, in a clean pocket without pressure, his passer rating's 86. And then in a, you know, muddy pocket or verse pressure, it's 30, like 30.1. So that's where the question becomes. Yes, he is markedly worse right now than he has been against pressure his entire career in Arizona. Even in the horrid 13 year, or, you know, first half of the year, for whatever it was. But it's that number. It's the 86.8 passer rating with no pressure. That is the concern right now. And it's something that, you know, we've talked about. There were a couple throws on Sunday again where you don't know if the arm is there anymore. Bypass the interception, which was just, again, you know, like you
explained, that was a dumb throw.
It was a bad throw. If you go back, I highlighted it in, you know, an article. Literally, as soon as the ball is snapped, Malik Hooker turns to run to that side of the field. Like, there was never a question in his mind where Palmer was going. So that's either he is a football savant, or Palmer just completely telegraphed that he was going to try that deep throw.
Here's the thing. He's done that throw on film a lot.
And so it was one of those things where, yeah, if he just the reason it's so maddening is literally Fitzgerald has his player on a 7-yard out. He has his defender turned towards the inside, like he had turned the defender completely around. And so you're like, oh man, if you just had not decided before the snap that you were going to try to make that throw to JJ Nelson, you know, that's a minimum seven yard gain, maybe more with some yards after the catch. But then you add on to that, that there was a minute 22 left. It was first down. Like, you just needed points at that point. It was one of those things. But then you go back, and so you look at some other throws. You look at that money throw on 3rd and 20 to Jerron Brown. The Nelson touchdown, he definitely underthrew him still by about 4 yards. But it worked. Like, because Nelson had his guys beat by so much, it didn't make a difference. But you can see that there are times when he can get enough mustard on it that he can still make the throws. The problem is how consistent will he have that arm strength? How consistently can he put the ball out there, for those guys? And that's where the problem lies for Palmer more than anything right now. And that's where the Cardinals have to figure it out. Like, is this a guy that can afford to throw the ball, 50 times a game because it's crazy? But, it's Bruce Arians. What are you going to do, right?
Well, when you're down at 2 scores and when your running game is 2.5 yards a carry, it's... Yeah.
Well, and I thought, moving on from Palmer, because I don't want to harp on Palmer too much because they're not going anywhere. Like, if we've learned anything about Bruce Arians, there's zero chance that, barring injury, that anybody else is going to play. Zero. Right. So it's not even worth discussing. But two, we're still trying to figure out what Palmer has left just as much as, you are. So it's not really worth even discussing. What is interesting, though, is how quick the hook was for Kerwin Williams. And it was exactly like we talked about on the show last week. Kerwin got the start. Kerwin got the first opportunity to be kind of the bell cow. And Kerwin didn't succeed. And, there's no other way around it. We're not trying to be jerks. We're not, he fell flat. I mean, he did not do a good job at all. Barely averaged over 2 yards per carry. And I don't want to say.
And in fairness, what we are seeing is that Indy defense is stout against the run. They are strong against the run. So there is that.
But
Kerwin didn't do anything.
No. And then Chris Johnson came in and gave you exactly what you knew you would get, which was the, low 4 yards per carry, going to get the yards that are there. And that, I think. That's what's going to end up being the downfall for Kerwin in this whole thing. He may get another chance. I don't know. But is that Arians knows when he puts Chris Johnson back there, to run the stretch right or stretch left, he knows that, okay, if there's 3 or 4 yards there, by golly, Chris Johnson's going to get the 3 or 4 yards. Kerwin hasn't shown that he will do that. And that's where maybe it's unfair, maybe, whatever it is, but when you're not invested in a guy, when you, really haven't spent any money, you didn't spend any in terms of, capital, you didn't really spend any on this guy, that's kind of what ends up happening is they get a chance, and if they don't work out, well, it's on to the next guy. And in this case, the next guy is a known commodity that is going to get the run, and he's not going to be a big production guy, but he'll do a little bit more than Kerwin did. And to Bruce Arians, that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, and it's going to go like this a lot. I think – I don't know if Chris Johnson's going to be – if he's ever going to overtake Kerwin as a starter. Then maybe after a couple more weeks of what he did, yes. But we've seen with the committee of backs before with Arians, he's going to start someone. He's going to get the first few carries. If he gets hot, he'll keep going. He'll keep rolling with him. But they have a script. They have a plan. And when Chris Johnson came to the game, it looked like to me, oh, this is the Chris Johnson drive. Only he was effective, so they kept going with him. I think that's going to be kind of the element that we're going to see from the Cardinals. Unless Chris Johnson, you know, Kerwin, based on the depth chart that was released today, Kerwin is still at the top, and Chris Johnson's still even behind Andre Ellington. So I expect the game plan to kind of go the same way. Kerwin will get the first carries. We'll see how he does. If he's then Chris Johnson will get his carries, and whoever happens to be the hot hand, as Garen's likes to say, will get the bulk of the carries. Now, if you look at the snap count, who played more than either one of those two was Andre Ellington, but he was out there for the passing game and wasn't particular. He had the one nice play, was kind of forgettable out on the field, and we hope, for the Cardinals' sake and for Andre's sake, that is not the case every single game, because they will need him. They need him. They need to be him to be. They need him to be the 2014 version of him, or rather, the 2013 version of him. Yeah,
they
2014
do.
Version was the.
Yeah, it was this version that you just watched. No, I mean they really do. I mean they have to find a way to get productivity out of their running backs, and I highlighted it in the JJ Nelson touchdown pass. The Colts did not bite at all on the play fake, but they did have to freeze for a second, and that's all you need. That's especially
with JJ Nelson. All you need is half a second, and then he's already beat you.
And so that's all they're really asking for, is just, you know, that half a second. And so when the Colts went into quarters coverage, which is, you know, the four defensive backs all kind of play back, the safety in the corner on that side both froze, and JJ got a full running start, and it was quickly over from there. So again, they don't need it to be crazy. They don't need it to be this, they don't need it to be this Dallas Cowboys 2016 running game. They don't need that. All they need is it to give them a half a second and to give them an opportunity to push the ball down the field. But, you know, when their offensive line was, again, as bad as it was, I guess this can be our kind of last bad thing. And the one really bad thing through two games is just how bad the offensive line's been, especially on that right side. You and I talked about this, and – you know, I'm never ever going to accuse a guy of not trying hard, but it sure as heck doesn't look like the same Jared Veldier that we have seen over the last 3 years here, from a ability standpoint.
You know, there's something to that. And even last year when he was playing left tackle before he got hurt, 3 years ago, he was really good. But we've seen what appears to be a steady decline in play. And I think that was the unspoken motivation behind moving Jared to the right side. That plus the ascension of DJ Humphreys, who played really well on that side, and that he's more natural there and has the natural body and build and athleticism they want over there. But maybe, you know, we're seeing the I'm not saying that, you know, and local radio hosts here have been talking about Jared Veldier, you know, every time he has a bad game, is his heart in the game? I don't doubt that his heart, I can't say that his heart isn't in the game. But that retirement talk, that he had, that Dave that he took off, I don't question his heart. I think he was starting to see his what's the phrase? His athletic mortality. He got moved to a position he's not played. He Ever. Came off a, I know he's never played it. He was coming off an injury that was really hard to rehab through. And, you know, he sees this report come out about the traumatic brain, you know, this, whatever it is, the brain injury. And it all kind of came to a head. He's like, can I keep doing this? And who was the player in Baltimore or Jacksonville who called it quits when he was getting beat by Dante Fowler?
Brendan
Albert. And he's getting beat by a guy who really wasn't beating anyone. He's like, okay, that's it. I know I'm done. And here, I'm not so much worried about his heart as I am just physically, he's not the same. We saw a slight decline at left tackle. He wasn't as dominant. But now you look at him on the right side, there were plays he looked lost. The numbers, Pro Football Focus didn't include him in their media release or in their recap. But I found out these numbers from our contact from Pro Football Focus. They gave him a 36.8 overall grade. That's terrible. And he gave up 5 pressures that include 4 hurries and a sack. So he gave up 5 pressures on 40 pass snaps. You know, that's not all that good. That's about 12.5% of the time they're giving us some sort of pressure. John Wetzel gave up the same amount of he had a much better job. He improved quite a bit, John Wetzel. So he did not allow a single pressure from the left side. So he improved a lot over the next week. Veldeer, though, and there were a couple of times he was on skates, and the guy, and maybe it is the technique. He should be trusting his technique better, and that's the line that Bruce Arians gave. But Veldeer just looked old. Kind of like Mike Iupati in week one. He looked old. And then Jared Veldeer looked that way. And I don't doubt that he'll bounce back, but it's going to be a long season because that offensive line, bad. I mean, there were moments, but they're not getting pushed in the running game. Palmer's getting hit early, and that's his issue. That's part of the play for Palmer early in the game is if he's not clean early, he doesn't get in rhythm. And when he's running his scripted plays, he expects things to go smoothly, and he gets hit a couple times, and guess what? He gets rattled. Not rattled like he's scared, but rattled frustrated. He's trying to force things now, and he gets frustrated at things that are happening. And, you know, he gets knocked down on he gets sacked on the first play. He gets knocked down on a short drop back. Those are things that can't be happening because he is a rhythm quarterback, and it's been so clear about this. We've seen him play. If he is kept upright and he's not, if he has a good pocket in front of him, the edges can collapse, but if he has an interior to go to, he can be as good as any quarterback in the NFL. But the offensive line just not yet hasn't been good. Shipley's been okay. Alex Boone was fine. Wessel was okay. He wasn't bad, but Bayman Veldeer just, you know, and when Arians complimented the left side of us, he named the guy. So, you know, AQ was good. Alex was fine. You know, Wetzel had a good game. He didn't mention Veldeer or Bain. So he didn't even mention them. They clearly did not have good games.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's what you don't want from the offensive line, especially if your quarterback is even struggling at this time to do things in a clean pocket. You need to be able to, you know, keep him clean so at least the highs can be more frequent. At least he can, you know, have those strong that strong work. So, you know, I think overall from the game you take away from it that they're not done, and that's what matters. And as bad as the NFC West is, they need to figure out a way to stay afloat. And with the news from Steve Kime today that maybe the first week of or first game after the bye in November that they could get David Johnson back. Well, you know, maybe that's all they need to focus on is, you know, getting to, I think that's 8 games in. So, you know, getting to 3-5 or 4-4 at that point, and then, you know, you get your best player back, and maybe you're able to do a little more offensively by that time.
I thought it was really interesting when Keim said that, because this was a classic pressure move. Oh, don't let anyone tell. I would rather see him come back. I would rather see the Cardinals hang around and then have him come back for the last bit of December to get in a playoff run. But it sounds like Keim is like, oh, no one, don't listen to the people who say you're going to be out X amount of time. You're a freak of nature. So you're going to heal up earlier. Hint, hint. we want you back on the field as fast as possible. Oh, that I actually was not a fan of that. I mean, because it also puts pressure on him. I mean, when Jonathan Cooper went down, they were very careful not to put any expectation that he was gonna come back right away. But, and we've seen it with other running backs, Beanie Wells, Ryan Williams. Don't push him. I mean, Arians himself said that was a career-threatening type injury, and the last thing you want him to do is to become one of those nicked-up backs that has these bad injuries. The one person on the team that I was actually a little bit frustrated with was Dron Brown. He ended up having some solid numbers, made some big plays, but he's officially become the number two receiver. He had to make some plays. There was the one throw that Palmer should have been intercepted on, but it didn't. And then it hit Jerron in the chest. That's not the easiest play to make, especially when you lose concentration for a second. But when the ball hits you in the chest, you got to catch it. There were two other plays where he has the ball in his hands and the defender knocks it out. His numbers were good. And if you get 4 catches for 72 yards on a regular basis, you feel good from a guy like Jerron Brown. But with Fitz not having a prolific game, with no John Brown, Jerron's got to make those plays. He's got to be a number two receiver and not a number four receiver playing the number two spot. And he has his moments, but the consistency, J.J. Nelson, he was fantastic. And I know he's got to work on consistency there, but if you can get Jerron making some tough catches earlier in the game, they're going to need that. I thought the receiver play was okay. Chad Williams got a catch. Britton Golden in his limited time looked good. But Fitz was, you know, they kind of took Fitz out of the game defensively. Nelson had his huge game. Brown had should have had more production. What was it they looked at? He was targeted 11 times and had 4 catches. That's not ideal.
No, it's not. But, you know, a couple of those targets were bad throws. You know, like you said, the one hit him in the face because the defender just missed. So it was one of those odd ones. But, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, it's tough. But the Cardinals have to find a way to make this work, you know. And they're not – or, you know, he's not – Tom Brady, but we've seen Tom Brady go out there and win with guys like Chris Hogan and Danny Amendola. Like, there's no reason that Palmer can't be successful. And he was in game 2, but there's no reason that Palmer can't be successful with the receiving corps that they have. So it's not ideal. You know, everybody's going to agree with that, but it doesn't have to be the death knell of this team right now. And that means that when guys get opportunities like Jerron Brown is getting, they have to maximize them. And it can't be, right. It can't be, like you said, it can't be a 4-for-11 performance. If they're going to give him that many targets, he needs to be consistent in production on those targets.
Yeah, and we're going to come back on the last section of Rise at Sea, right? We're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys coming up this next weekend. Coming up on this weekend on Monday Night Football, the Cardinals get their home opener. We finally get them seen back. So it's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, talking Cardinals Cowboys. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and we're going to talk about the Monday night matchup. And you know, suddenly this game was supposed to be a great matchup between the resurgent Cardinals and the young and exciting Cowboys with Dak Prescott against Carson Palmer, the two best young running backs in football with David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott. Now you've got 2-1-1 teams. David Johnson's not going to play. He's on injured reserve. Ezekiel Elliott possibly might not play depending on how things go in the courts for the NFL. And the Cowboys haven't looked particularly impressive. The Cardinals have looked bad, and the Cowboys have not been impressive. What should we expect this game?
I don't know if there's anything we can expect, and that's kind of what it boils down to. We don't know what either of these teams are yet. And, I kind of wrote about that in my power rankings I did today. I listed a lot of these one-on-one teams together and said, you can – I put them in order of how I would rate them right now, but you can put these guys in any order, and I'm not going to argue with you, and the Cowboys and Cardinals are two of those teams. Are they good NFL teams? I don't know. Are they playoff contenders? I think by default, yes. The NFC East and the NFC West have not, gotten out to great starts this year.
And for lack of a better phrase, didn't say they're wide open.
Exactly.
Those divisions are wide open.
Well, and they're wide open because we don't know what any of these teams are. You talked about it. The Giants look pathetic. They look just not good at all. You look at the Seahawks. They've scored one touchdown all season. The 49ers haven't scored a touchdown all season. So when you look at the NFC West and you look at the NFC East, this could be a meeting of the top two teams, because technically it is, or it could be a meeting of teams, trying to stay out of the cellar, which technically it is. And then, I get that it's the first week of the season, or, the first quarter of the season, but that's what this matchup is, because Dallas doesn't look like themselves. Zeke Elliott, I think, had 5 yards on 7 carries on Sunday against Denver's defense. The Cardinals.
Tom Brady had more rushing yards than Ezekiel Elliott. And Tom Brady had 9 yards rushing. Ezekiel Elliott had 8. He had 8.
So
that was made for a great meme, by the way.
And when you look at it, I don't think the Cardinals defense is quite on the level of the Broncos defense, but I would say it's a notch below that. And, maybe they're not going to hold Zeke to 8 yards, but can they hold him to 80? Can they? And I do think that they can give Dak Prescott similar problems. So again, I think what this really comes down to is, can the Cardinals take advantage of a less than good defensive unit in the Cowboys? Can their offense sustain? Because I think the defense through the first 2 weeks has proven that they're pretty good. I think 7 quarters of football, they've been what I would call very good. And then 1 quarter of football, they were below average. So can you get, that 4 quarters in one game from the Cardinals defense to be really good again? And then can your offense finally find some sort of rhythm? Especially early. That's the thing that was missing last year for half the season, I think it was. And then this year, going into this year, that's what made Arizona so darn difficult to beat in 2015, was that they seemed to always get out fast. They always seemed to get out hot and give their defense the ability, and I don't mean this in a negative way, to give their defense the ability to play reckless. And that's when their defense is at their best, when they're able to play a little reckless, when they're able to do you know, to be a little aggressive, and they can take some chances, because you know what, our offense has put 14 points on the board in the first two series. We're up 14 to nothing. We've only got one stop. Now we can try to do some things, and we can try to, you know, create that avalanche. And we saw that in 2015, I think, in what, three or four different games, where that avalanche of just started. And we didn't really see that last year outside of the LA game in LA. We never really saw that avalanche come during the first 15 weeks. And so can we get that, especially on national TV? Because we know that a lot of these guys love to perform on national TV. You know, Patrick Peterson and Tyrann Mathieu especially love to perform. Are we going to get the first kind of big display from Kim Diche? He was very solid against the run, against the Colts, but he didn't really offer much in the pass rush, got another encroachment penalty and had to be pulled off the field immediately. So, you know, will we see a little bit from Kim Diche? And then does Palmer show up under the lights? That's really what it's going to come down to for me in this game. Can the Cardinals start fast? Because I'll tell you this, I don't think the Cardinals can play from behind against the Cowboys. And I tell you why. Because that Cowboys offensive line, as bad as it was against the Broncos, they were playing from behind. So they didn't have the chance to really get the running game going. Again, we're only talking 7 carries for Zeke. If the Cowboys are up, even if it's 13-3 like the Colts were, I can promise you, you're not going to see a heavy dose of Jacoby Brissett. You know, you're going to get all Frank Gore. And so in this game, you're not going to see Dak Prescott throwing the ball around. You're going to see Zeke. You're going to see the Cowboys line up and dare the Cardinals to stop them. And last year, that's why the Cowboys won so many games, is because nobody could do it. So the Cardinals need to find a way to start fast offensively, or else they could be on the wrong side of an avalanche. And it may not be, you know, a game where they lose 31-10, but it could be a game where they lose, you know, 20-10, and it's not as close as it seems, because the Cowboys just put the beat down on them in the second half, just running them into the ground. And I think that offense is still here. Maybe I'm a little foolhardy because of that, but I think this offense, if it starts fast, they can find a rhythm, and it can help this entire team.
And for me, I like some of the matchups that they have. Obviously, some of the strengths that the Cowboys have. For Dez Bryant, you've got Patrick Peterson, so it kind of takes care of that. For Ezekiel Elliott, that rush defense, that running defense looks really good. The Dallas offensive line is not what it was a year ago at all. And so you have to like Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden off the edge. Maybe this is the game where Golden kind of takes the next step, because obviously Chandler Jones will be matched up against Tyrann Smith, which is a good matchup. If you take away the running game for Dallas, Dak Prescott is not the same guy. He's still very steady. He reminds me a lot of Russell Wilson in terms of his demeanor. And then the Dallas defense just is not great. And if you look at their defensive backfield, if the Cardinals can give Palmer time, he should be able to do things down the field. I saw a stat, I can't remember, I'm not going to quote it exactly, that Dallas has not done much man-to-man defense at all this year. On defense for the defensive backs. And that shows you kind of the trust that they have in their secondary right now, that they're just trying to get through games and hopefully not get totally killed. So the Cardinals have the potential to play well offensively against against a pretty at best average defense. I'd say you'd have to say they match up defensively well against this Dallas team. But it comes down to, can that run defense continue to be stout? They were really good against Amir Abdullah. They were solid for the most part against the Colts. Frank Gore did a little bit of on them, but if you look at their numbers, they still kept the rushing numbers down low. Even when you had a Colts team that was in control of the ball for much of the game, the Cardinals were able to force them into passing situations. It just becomes a matter of which do they start off. Like you said, they start off quickly enough. We've said it for the past couple, 3 years. The Cardinals are a front-running team. If they get a lead, and this is what they were back with Kurt Warner too. Kurt Warner was a great front-running quarterback. Carson Palmer's got a whole bunch of comebacks, but a lot of those comebacks came after they had a lead and gave up the lead, and so he's already in rhythm. So they already have the confidence from earlier in the game. I think the Cardinals win this game. I think it's going to be. I'm too much of a homer, and I think, oh, yeah, they're going to kill him. It's going to be great. They're going to break out. This is going to be a fun game to watch, I think, because I think we finally see the Cardinals get the offensive side of the ball kind of put together better, but their defense is going to look not as good because Dallas is going to come back, and they're going to be stronger, and they're going to be tougher. And so I expect this to be a close game. I think the Cardinals will win. And I think you look at if you trust at all that this team is a contending team, you have to think that they're going to win this game because it's a home game. It's against an NFC rival. You've got to win those games. This game is going to be the game that determines what team they are the rest of the year, right?
I think it will determine their overall contendership, but I think it also, you know, like I said, it'll determine whether or not they're a serious contender or if they're just the NFC, you know, worst contender. And I don't know if this division goes back to being the NFC worst, but when you look at it from a whole, I'm not going to count them out of anything, even with a loss. But I think you hit on something important. If they're not competitive, win or lose, if they're not competitive, they're not really in it anymore. Now, you know, obviously you want to win this game, and I think both of us think they can win. I haven't even decided who I'm taking because I literally can't figure out who either team is. If I was to, like, spit something right now, I'd just guess 24-21 Cardinals because it's at home. But when you look at it, this game will determine the impact the Cardinals can have, not in the NFC West, but in the rest of the NFC. Maybe they're not on the level of Atlanta right now, but you have to get there to even have a chance to prove, you know, your worth against a team like Atlanta. So this game is going to go a long way. One, in like you said, with Detroit, this is going to go a long way in helping with playoff seeding at the end of the season, because right now there's a bunch of teams clustered together at 1-1, and there's really no way to discern who's going to rise up out of that group. Like you said, it's wide open right now. And so getting as many wins as possible is important, but even more important is getting in as many wins in the NFC. And that's what this is going to be.
And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. You can find us in a number of ways. Please go to iTunes if you haven't already. Subscribe to our iTunes channel. Get those episodes downloaded automatically. Give us a 5-star rating. You can also find us on Blog Talk Radio and Audio Boom. You can find us on each of one of our sites at cardswire.com and revengeofthebirds.com, as well as on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, basically anywhere you can find great podcasts. Make sure you have us, and thank you for having us as part of your listening routine. On behalf of this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Go Cardinals, Rise Up Sea Red, and hope we come back next week and we're talking about a 2-1 Cardinals team. Go Cards.